Everyone, Pastor Mark here with Harmony Toluca Lake, and I have the great pleasure of being in the company of Reb Jefferson Beaker. Hello.
Hello, and I in your company, by the way.
Yes. And so this is an Our Story short stories segment, and today we're going to be focusing on a tough topic, and one that is relevant. Christian nationalism. So, gosh, here we go.
Such a light topic you picked for us, Mark.
And
couldn't you talk about Chanel's spring line or something? No, we're going to talk about Christian.
Well, I mean, come on. Think about the things that have just recently happened, and who knows what's going to happen. Just so you know, everyone, we're recording a few days prior to the release of this episode, so who knows what's going to happen between now and then. But gosh, we have in the state of Louisiana, they stated, we want the Ten Commandments posted in English in all of the classrooms. We want, in Oklahoma, we want the Bible brought into the classrooms. And we haven't even talked about how is it going to be taught? How is it going to be presented? Not bringing anything else in.
Right.
And now we have the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump.
Right.
And that's being made out to be as though it was God's plan. In fact, I'll bring this up in a minute, where I was shocked when I looked at Facebook. In fact, it was, let me see where I can find this, because again, I was just so shocked when I read it. It says, in the Bible, applying blood to the right ear of a newly ordained priest is part of a ritual that symbolizes their transition from a private citizen to a public leader and representative of God. And the ritual is described in Leviticus chapter 8, verses 23 and 24. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Really? And so, and Leviticus, that's a holiness code that was back in the day.
Right.
Do we, is that applicable to us today to follow Leviticus? And the answer is no.
No, it is not. It is
So, but we're focusing on nationalism. Well, first off, it's Christian nationalism, but I want to break it down to first nationalism.
Okay.
Define nationalism, just divisive. Correct?
It is. It is. And it gets defined currently as isolationism, that only we matter, that all that the resources that we have are just for us. We're not going to share with others, or we're not going to intervene in problems that are outside of our borders.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at history. Let's go back to the 30s, when the isolationist movement in this country that was led by Charles Lindbergh, who had been a big aviation hero, and Father Conklin, who was a radio Catholic priest, preached that a form of Christian nationalism, and that what happens in other places has nothing to do with us. But what we learned in history was eventually it is going to have something to do with us, because we ignored what was going on with the Nazis in Europe and what was going on in Poland. And eventually it spread to a point where we had to intervene because it was going to affect us. So I think we have to be very careful of the language and the rhetoric that we put out, that because it can come back on us. And I think, to answer your question, nationalism, if we define it as patriotism for loving one's country and what one's country is capable of doing, it doesn't always do it, but could be capable of doing, that's a wonderful thing. But when you think of Christian nationalism, you're allowing people who want to define what is Christian, what is worship of God or Jesus Christ, in terms that they have an agenda that they're putting forth. And it is going to decide you're in, you're out.
So we're not living into the Beatitudes.
Not at all. Right. They're ignoring that. Now, they're putting the Ten Commandments in these classrooms. Are they even talking about the Beatitudes? What about the poor? Jesus says they're blessed. What about the grieving? Jesus says, come unto me. Bring your burdens to me. The hungry. Jesus says we are to minister to people. And in the name of Christian nationalism, it is, if you look at it in a corporate sense, it becomes the bottom line. We're not going to spend any money on this, so you can forget any largesse for you over here because you don't matter. Maybe you're gay, maybe you're African American, maybe you're Latino, maybe you're transgender. You are other, and you have to tick all these boxes or you don't count.
So could we say that Christian nationalism is not just now, it has been in our past? So, mm-hmm. for example, slavery?
Sure.
Segregation?
Right.
So how did Christian nationalism come into play during all of that?
I think what happened is, to further their agenda, they cherry-pick what they want to pull out of Scripture. And they do that and use that as a weapon against people. Mm-hmm. And that creates trauma. You can eventually legislate something so that people are included, but you're not going to immediately get rid of the trauma. And people live with the trauma of slavery and of the Lavender Scare, when people who were gay in the 50s were just assumed to be communist, and you're going to lose your job and we're going to print your name in the paper. Growing up in Washington, D.C., I remember when I first started going to gay bars that there would be older men there who had lived through the Lavender Scare. Mm. And they said, if your car was parked near a gay bar, the police came around and took down all the license plates and ran them. And if you worked for the federal government, you would be accused of being a homosexual and lose your job.
Wow.
We are so close to that happening again. Mm. And when we talk about Ten Commandments being in a classroom, or how is the Bible going to be interpreted, it gets to a point, those things start out very small and people gain some ground and then it grows. Okay, we can get away with this now. We can get away with this now. And it could even come down, and we talked about this, Mark, that we have a very open and affirming, loving congregation at Harmony. Our doors are open to everyone, and we affirm their worth as a human being, as God created, perfect, whole, and complete, just as they are, and that Jesus adores them. Jesus walks with them. And we talk about that. But in a Christian nationalism state, it could be back to, say, during the time of the Crusades, you had to worship only this way, mm-hmm. only preach this. You had to interpret the Bible this way. And remember, in the founding of our country, when the Pilgrims and all those early people came to this country, their religion was so restrictive that if you weren't in church for 3 hours on Sunday, you were in the stockade. It's legislating and demanding behavior by people who want control.
So, but, all right, Christianity. Isn't Christianity political?
Yes, I think it's political. I think Jesus understood politics very well. He understood that because he was going up against the Roman Empire, which was political, and he understood. But he also understood, when you want to put it in political terms, the laws of God, mm-hmm. that God is a loving God. And whoever comes to God in prayer or in need is going to be ministered to.
So from this aspect of Christianity being political, we're talking about justice.
Justice.
We're talking about
mercy.
And of service to others.
Service to others.
And that would be to our neighbors, especially those who are marginalized and in need.
It's truth. Social justice.
But see, now that's a word that really rankles people.
It's interesting that in every church that I interviewed with to become their lead pastor, one of the questions that would eventually be asked, kind of, well, we don't want to ask you this, but how do you feel about social justice? And I said, a church without social justice is a country club.
Mm.
You have to give to the community. You have to reach out. You have to look for needs and find ways that you can fill them, knowing that the church can't fill every need in the community, but there might be something, and you fill that need. And you let people know that this is a place where people can come and say, I'm hurting. Pastor, can I talk to you? Mm-hmm. Can I haven't eaten in 3 days. You have a brunch and learn today. I'm not a member of your church. Can I come in and have something to eat? Yes, let me escort you in.
Right.
And fill your plate because you are welcome here.
Versus telling them, oh, by the way, you're going to go to hell if you're not saved by Jesus.
Yeah, you're going to go to hell because, well, first of all, you can't come in because I don't know if you're a sinner. I don't know what kind of language you used earlier today. Does your mama know that you walked out of the house wearing that outfit? I mean, you cannot come. There's none of that. You are welcome. And we want people to come in. I see people walking down the street on our brunch and learn, and I see these people, and I think if anybody out here is hungry, I want them to know that they can come in.
Which we've had.
We've had that, yes, many times. And they may not stay for the rest of the service. They may have something to eat and leave. That's okay.
All right. So we can agree that Christianity is political. However, we're not pushing politics in a way that is authoritative.
Right.
Because then we layer that in with Christian nationalism, and Christian nationalism is driven by an authoritative measure.
Right. And in an atmosphere where one doesn't feel comfortable asking the question, why? Why is it this way? Why are you doing it this way? I like to be in a church. I like to be in my meditations with God, asking all the why questions. I may not get all the answers, but I know I can ask, and I'm not going to be punished for asking or even saying, I disagree.
Mm-hmm. But now, our history was open to religion. Various religions, correct?
Absolutely. Well, people came here for religious freedom, and they settled in colonies. The Puritans settled in New England. The Catholics settled in Maryland. That was a Catholic colony, and but they had their colony. But other people were also welcome.
So we weren't founded on Christian values and beliefs.
No, that came later when people decided they wanted to add that on because, well, we're a Christian nation and you have to believe this way. But we weren't founded that way. And if you look at the founders, these men were not demigods. They were flawed men. We know they were flawed men. Half of them owned slaves. But they were brilliant in that they understood that as a nation, our strength is going to be in our freedom to worship God the way we want to worship God. Mm-hmm. And they put in the Bill of Rights a separation of church and state. And they did that for a reason, because they understood that it is so easy for Christian nationalism to arise. It did in the fourth century. It did during the Crusades. It does over, and we see it in other countries. And they were wise enough to know that this country could go that way. Mm-hmm. But we want to put it in the Constitution that there has to be a separation of church and state. And they don't say what any church has to look like, just church and state have to be separate. And we talked before about how even in the Declaration of Independence, as it was being finished, and they were all ready to vote, and a gentleman stood up, he was a pastor, and he said, I have an amendment. And everyone went, oh, not another amendment. Please, we're finally going to get this thing voted on. And he said, how can we absolutely hope to succeed against the mightiest kingdom on earth without the help, and he used the words, divine providence. And these founders, who were from different religious faiths, many of them Episcopalian, some deists, had no problem with relying on divine providence. Whatever that divine force of love is, mm-hmm, that can protect us, they knew they needed to rely on that. But they didn't say it had to look like this church or that religion. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a powerful addition. And I'm worried, particularly with today's Supreme Court, who seems to just throw out the bits of the Constitution that they want to throw out, just like Christian nationalists choose the bits of the Bible that they're going to use to hurt people. They could say, well, this is too broadly defined, church and state. We don't know what this is. So Christian nationalism isn't so bad.
So as we come to a close in this conversation, what can we do in regards to this movement that is occurring, this Christian nationalism, which I view is actually dangerous to democracy?
We can vote.
Mm-hmm.
Our power is in our vote. And voting against those who promote separateness, promote hate, promote divisiveness, and set themselves up as better than others, making other people feel like they have to be less than because of whatever reason this group has decided that you're less than.
Yeah, and I think another thing that we have to do is continue to be who we are and who God has called us to be, to set the example that the light of Christ shines through us, not to make us Jesus, but that we are Christ-like and caring for our neighbors, and following what Jesus said for us to do, love God, love neighbor.
Thomas Jefferson, when he put together the Jefferson Bible, he took out all the miracle things that Jesus did. He wanted to concentrate on the words of Jesus. Love, peace, the poor are blessed, those in need are blessed. We need to minister to them. Healing. Let me pray for healing for you, for your loved ones. And I'm not going to ask if your loved ones are worthy. It's not for me to judge. That you've come to me with a request. I, as somebody who professes to be a Christian, a lover of Jesus and a follower of Jesus, are happy to know the truth for your loved one.
Yes.
The truth of healing.
Well, I appreciate what you've shared in this conversation that we've had. And of course, it's short, so much more that we could be talking about.
Yes.
Yes.
But and tomorrow it'll be all different because...
But in the meantime, just want to say thank you to all of our listeners for... you know, just listening to what we have to say in these conversations. And if you would like us to address any other relevant topics, please send ideas to me at Mark, M-A-R-K, at HollywoodUMC.org. Again, it's a pleasure to have Rev. Jefferson Beaker as a guest in
Namaste.
A conversation. Namaste. And also for all of you, it is just always a joy and a pleasure. Please download, share these episodes, and we look forward to having another conversation here soon. And in the meantime, we wish you a great day and peace.